Thank you for listening to the Impact Leaders Podcast, featuring leaders in sustainable and impact investment, sharing their stories, experiences, and advice to increase awareness and highlight best practices in order to help us transition more capital into the industry faster. I am grateful that you're choosing to invest your time to listen to our guests, since I know that you're going to feel encouraged and inspired. I am JP Dalman, founder and CEO of ILM Partners, and we're the proud sponsors of the podcast. ILM Partners is an advisory and soon-to-launch multi-asset management firm targeting to acquire and scale investment funds focused on sustainability and impact, one of the fastest-growing areas of investment management globally, enabling investors to generate returns with confidence whilst having a net positive impact in the world. Our mission is to facilitate and accelerate the transition of $5 billion of capital to sustainable impact investing in the next 5 years. If you would like to explore the opportunity of working together, email contact@ilmpartners.com for an introductory and confidential conversation. Your support means everything to us, since it's what really keeps us going. So make sure you share our work with someone that will benefit from it. Please remember to subscribe to get the notifications and check the notes from each episode. We hope you enjoy today's special conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Impact Leaders. I hope everyone is very well, healthy, and safe. Today's episode of Impact Leaders is the fifth on our new series called The Sustainable Investment Dilemma, looking into how industries can help address the climate and social crisis, in particular, the financial industry, taking on the opportunity to find and fund the solutions we need for a sustainable future. And to continue with the series, our guest today is Mr. Renato Mazzola.
Hello, JP.
Welcome. Thank you for being with us today, Renato. I know that you are extra busy today, and we may touch a little bit on it, but you are today in São Paulo?
São Paulo, yes.
Fantastic. So today is a very special first for the episode, given that we will be focusing on LATAM. As most of the current listeners already know, I am on a mission to enable the transition of capital into sustainable impact investing faster and at scale. And for full disclosure as well, as part of my mission since I was born in South America, I have a special interest to help the region in particular. And having been working with BTG Pactual as a client of ILM Partners for the past year, you know, I have been blessed with this opportunity. And I think there's so much potential to achieve performance and impact, having one of the globally recognized financial institutions locally focusing on doing more and better. Provides a kind of a sense of inspiration and hope, I'll say. That's how I, without exaggeration, I have to be honest. So extra excited to have Renato with us to discuss the region, the lessons learned and experiences in doing business across LATAM and globally, the great potential, and how the pandemic has impacted the way investors and companies are quickly moving towards a more sustainable model, among other very interesting subjects. Yeah, are we on par there?
JP. I just want to, first of all, to thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be part of your podcast. I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts. I learn a lot. So hopefully people will enjoy today.
Nice. Thank you, Renato. I appreciate it. And that's the whole point of it. I always tell, you know, all the guests, and sometimes the listeners maybe don't get to hear this, but it's really about, you know, learning, right, and sharing. And I think that it's nice to hear that the guests also learn, you know, from other guests, right? So that's what we need to do.
It's part of the experience.
Yes. So as an introduction, let me share with the audience a short version of your bio. Renato Mazzola is head of private capital division, including infrastructure, private equity, impact investing, and venture capital, and part of the BTG Pactual Partners Committee. He is indeed the managing partner of BTG Pactual. Renato joined the company in June 2011 and has more than 20 years of experience in the investment industry. He's currently a board member of companies in several countries, including Eniva, Globenet, Bodytech, and Estapa. Prior to joining BTG, Renato spent 6 years as the senior investment officer at the Inter-American Development Bank, IDB, in the infrastructure division, and before that at JP Morgan. And he holds a BA in economics from Pontificia Universidade Católica, PUCSP, an MBA in capital markets from Universidade de São Paulo, and a master's in international relations from the Fletcher School, Tufts University. So it's a pleasure, really, Renato. It's a great, great career so far. You know, for those that do not kind of see him just yet, when you look at the picture, you see Renato is very young. So he's kind of still at the prime of the career, right? So lots more to come.
A lot of fun. You're having a lot of fun. A lot to come, yeah.
Yes, yes. So as it is our tradition, our first question to our guests is, you know, what is sustainable and impact investing to you?
Yeah, listen, thank you again for the invitation. I think this is something that I've been changing my definition of sustainable development impact. I learned a lot while I was at the IDB. And back then, this was started in the mid-2000s. We were mostly focused on ESG. And when I came to BTG about 10 years ago now, for all the funds that we have, we were very focused on ESG. More recently, I think we changed a lot our definition of impact. Back then, I thought that ESG was enough and ESG was impact. And right now, the way I see sustainable development impact, it's something that we have embedded in our DNA. And it's not just doing good for the sake of doing good, like charity or donation. It's like in the heart of what we are doing, we do things in the proper manner. And we seek for investments where in the long term, they will be impacting the population and our environment. So again, it's very different from what I was perceiving to be impact investing a few years ago, mostly because I added concept that we need to have this concept of impact embedded in our DNA so that it turns to be sustainable and not just when we are performing well and we have extra cash to distribute. So I think for me, at least, a more recent definition.
Nice. And I think that came part of, you know, a lot of people that are in different businesses, right? It's happening. And again, I'm glad to hear that you are going through the journey, because one of the reasons why I do the podcast, among other initiatives, you know, to raise awareness and share best practices, because I realized that basically a bit what you were saying, right? So the definition either is very narrow. I mean, you were, again, very, I like the word blessed, right, to work at the IDB, which is, you know, a great organization. And definitely you can see there the actual, you know, projects that, you know, infrastructure that are the real project that we need to have in place, you know, to get the development of the different countries. But most of the people in the franchise industry, you know, I still maybe don't have the actual understanding and definitely have a narrow definition, perhaps, you know, that's still limited to ESG potentially, right? Perfect.
Yeah, and JP, I fully agree with you. And I would say that there are a number of really, really horrible and bad things about the pandemic. But I think if there is one good thing about the pandemic, if we could say, it's that people realize that they need to pay more attention to how they can impact society. I think the sense of urgency, the sense of kind of a call to action, as you like to ask at the end of your podcast, but like, I think people realize that they have to be more proactive about changing the environment they are in. I think what I was expecting to see over the next 5 to 10 years, I normally say here that we are already witnessing right now. I think in LATAM, I think we are significantly behind what you see in Europe. But I think even here in Brazil, I think people woke up and people realized that if we just ignore what is surrounding us, it doesn't matter how much money, how much wealth you have. If you don't care about what is surrounding you, you're going to be impacting. Regardless how rich, how well prepared, how smart you are, you're going to be impacted. So you can see where we are today. Everyone is in their own place, not being able to travel, not being able to work outdoor. And I think this was a major turning point to a lot of countries, to a lot of people. And when you look at the financial market in general, I think we've seen a number of changes in the way companies are performing. Investors are looking to allocate their own resources, new financial products taken into consideration, impact measure. Something that for me, if you ask me this question back in 2019, I would say, yeah, JP, maybe 2025, 2030, you would expect to see these changes. Right now, you're already witnessing the changes. It's a change what we are seeing today.
So Renato, another part of the question, which is the series, you know, called Sustainable Investment Dilemma. So we have been funding what's been happening until now. You know, we have COVID now, and maybe we can jump, and you mentioned the difference perhaps between, you know, Europe, North America, LATAM. So maybe we can jump straight into, are we facing a dilemma? And then what are the needs of the regions in this context of what is happening globally or in other more developed places like in Europe in terms of sustainable impact investing?
Well, I think in LATAM, I think we are, as I said, I think we are significantly behind where you guys are in Europe and even North America. I think Europe seems to be way more advanced than North America. And unfortunately, I think we are just in the beginning. When you look, for instance, in Chile, the amount of funds dedicated to impact more than doubled from 2018 to 2020. And the numbers, they're still small. We're talking about 300 million. So it's not that we are talking about a huge amount of money. We're talking about a fairly small amount of money. When you look at Brazil, the number of impact funds that we had 2 years ago and today, more than triple. So I think we are starting to see. And I think even the perception, the standards that you expect to see in different regions are fairly different. Because Europe started much earlier, you have not only companies, but you have individuals already on their day-to-day, already acting and behaving in a very sustainable way. I think while in Latin America, you're starting to see this movement, but it's still not embedded in our DNA. I think it's still a small group of people pushing forward. Slowly, we are moving towards this direction. I'll give you one example. Less than a month ago, I bumped into the guy who works on a daily basis in my building. So I was talking to the guy, and normally we recycle all the garbage we have. So we have three small cans and we put outside right next to our door. And so one morning I bumped into the guy and he was mixing up everything. And I was like, whoa, why are you doing that? He was like, oh, it's all garbage. I was like, no, but there is one that you can see it's just plastic. There is one that you have our leftovers. You have this one where you have. And so the guy was like, well, it doesn't really matter. People won't care. I mean, it's all garbage. So I think we are still moving towards this direction where, you know, some companies, some people, they still have a conscience about that, while the majority of the people are still not there yet. And I think that's the biggest difference between Europe and Latin America right now. I think you guys are already there and we are moving towards there.
I wonder sometimes if that also is, I completely got the example, by the way, because I can imagine, but then at the same time, I wonder what the percentage would be when we look at it in here, because the way that a lot of people still behave, let's say in the UK where I am, still is shocking sometimes, you know, in terms of the consciousness at that level, which is like one of the most basic levels, right? And then coming back to the point you made, you know, so again, for I love numbers as well, right, and context, as you mentioned, you know, Latin America still represents only around like 0.52, I think, of the 715 billion quota on global impact focused assets, right? So it's like you say, still on the investment side in a small proportion, which at the same time, always, you know, small numbers give the opportunity for bigger growth, right? So that's another thing that perhaps we'll talk about. And then also, I think that you have mentioned in other conversations and communications we have had in terms of the need for infrastructure, which is kind of, you know, the bigger piece, right? And then you have some of the challenges around kind of inequalities, and you alluded a little bit about, you know, the fact that even if you have all the resources, you know, I will always remember one of the things that catches my attention when I go to Argentina is always security, right? Because obviously if there's inequality, security levels are different as well. So we should go link with poverty, with inclusion. And I think that, again, is very global and very much applied to a lot of developed countries. But obviously in the bigger countries such as Brazil, where you are, or, you know, other countries in LATAM, you know, you can really see the difference and then the effect that it has, right?
Yeah, and JP, on the infrastructure aspect, I think you touched on something that is very critical, because you look at the existing infrastructure in LATAM. For instance, you look at the water companies we have in Brazil, or the amount of people that still don't have access to clean water, sewage. I'll give you one small example. About 2 weeks ago, we had the privatization of the water company of Rio de Janeiro. It's a major city, the city that attracts the highest number of tourists in Brazil. And the amount of money the private sector would put into this company for the next 10 years, it's approximately what the public company was supposed to invest over the next 100 years. So with that, we would have the capacity to speed up access to clean water, which is a basic thing. You would think that a major city like Rio would have the capacity to have clean water for everyone, and the company will be performing major investments to make sure that this could actually not impact people in many different fashion. So I think when you look at the existing infrastructure in the region, it's still very below our peers globally. And I think there is a major effort to move forward and to attract investments. You look at some of the countries in the region, your country, Argentina, Brazil, not including Bolivia, even Paraguay and other companies, they have had a major issue to attract foreign capital over the last few years. And the amount of resources governments are able to put up and to invest is fairly limited. So as a consequence, we have a very high underinvestment in infrastructure in the region, which leads to several issues that we can obviously get into more detail later on. But I think this is a major consideration for the region.
Thank you for that fact about the privatization of the water company. It's always interesting to learn about that. You know, there were some other conversations that I've been in some forums here, and you know, water is a real issue that is less discussed. And I always, you know, as I've learned as well, it's waste really. So it's water and waste all together, right? And waste management, because again, Rio would be like a great example again of, you know, how some of the cities in some countries grow kind of in an immeasurable way, and obviously without no inverted commas infrastructure to support, you know, the way that people live, right? And I think that is a word that you mentioned before, which is make it livable, right? And then one last comment I'll make is something that you share with me as well, was that the estimation of the effect of COVID-19 hitting in Latin America by the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean estimates that we're going to have another 30 million people push into poverty. So again, these are kind of big numbers that sometimes people don't realize. And we're not going to talk about population displacement really on this conversation, but that is something that is, you know, I like mentioning because people don't realize how much displacement there is in places like Brazil, like Colombia, obviously Venezuela, and it's effectively, and it's not the same, but so that I say it sometimes so that people realize it's the equivalent of a refugee, right? They have to basically flee for various reasons, different than war, at times actually because of like guerrillas and other things, but also creates, you know, these problems, right? But yes, that's something to come back to. So let me quickly move to BTG Pactual. You know, I like to just a little bit of time to so that people that haven't learned about BTG already, that they can get some of the key facts here. So I recommend everyone to go to btgpactual.com. That's btgpactual.com, where you can find O Mayor Banco de Investimentos de América Latina, the largest investment bank in Latin America by Euromoney Awards for Excellence. And it is one of the largest independent asset managers in LATAM as well. It operates in the investment banking, corporate lending, sales and trading, wealth management, and asset management markets. It was created in 1983 and has been managed based on a meritocratic culture of partnership, focusing on the customers, excellence, and long-term vision. And the institution has established itself as one of the most innovative in the sector, having won several national and international awards. They have over 85, as of I think Q1 report just came out, I picked up this number, 81 billion of assets under management and over 3,500 employees in offices spread across Brazil, I think São Paulo, Rio, Chile, Argentina, Colombia, Peru, Mexico, United States, Portugal, and England in the UK. So they are the leaders, you know, among the investment banks in Latin America since 2012. You know, I think quoted many times as the biggest investment bank. like I said, 85 billion as of Q1. 30 on the asset management business is about 30 billion. And on the private capital division, which is your division, I think it's about, again, these are from reais translated, but I think it's about 2.75 billion, if I get it about right.
We have roughly 6 billion USD.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Again, I just like sometimes sharing so that people get an idea, but you know, it's quite, and again, you know, you made a comment before in terms of, you know, the what is in impact in LATAM, and then, you know, what the numbers are sometimes in Europe. But I always tell people as well, so $1 million in the US or in the UK is not the same as $1 million in LATAM, right? So sometimes I have to find, you know, sometimes a translator measure, you know, so that people understand, you know, what that actually would mean. But it means a lot more. 6 billion means a lot more than 6 billion. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned about the amount of asset under management, because this is something that we've been witnessing a major change. And I think it's also, we've been witnessing a drop in interest rate globally. And this obviously had a major impact globally. But in LATAM, and especially in Brazil, Brazil has been known for being a country with the highest interest rate in the world. But over the last 3-4 years, we've seen a major change, and a change in which interest rate dropped from 2-digit to a very low single digit. And this provided a major transformation in the country. I think I always alluded this to a similar transformation that we had in the mid-90s when inflation dropped from over 1,000 to single digit number. And there's a lot of low income people to have capacity to buy stuff, to move up out of the poverty level. And this was a major transformation. And right now what we see, it's a different type of transformation, but it's a transformation which, while the whole population used to invest only into government bonds, or primarily into government bonds, and this would not lead to any additional investment or private capital investment, I think the drop in interest rate led the country now to a new reality in which you see a high number of people now moving away from government bonds to private investments. And this led to see a vibrant stock market, a vibrant bond market, and a lot of individuals having the capacity to buy stuff from ordinary staff all the way to the housing market. So it's a major transformation where a lot of people that didn't have access to buy anything, or it's moving to a moment in which they have the capacity to start looking for new ways to invest. And this led to a very interesting transformation, because companies took advantage of this. Companies now, they have way more capacity to raise money locally, as opposed to the past that they had to go internationally to raise money. And this has led companies to grow and to invest. And this is why we are seeing a vibrant capital market in the country for the last several years. So I think it's a major transformation that is allowing companies to grow, allowing people to buy stuff. And it's a new environment that we are in. Just to give an idea, in less than 12 months, we were able to raise close to the numbers that I was looking right before coming here, close to 12 billion reais. This is more than $2 billion. Which in the past, the only way to raise this money was internationally. And now we are raising with local people. So it's a major change that we've seen with the drop in interest rate.
And the difference before is people would kind of either hold on to it and do direct investments and not leverage?
Yeah, before, government bonds were paying so much that they would just buy government bonds.
Of course.
Nothing else. So companies were not able to raise money locally to continue to invest. There was not many, it was hard to IPO a company because there were no buyers for their shares. And this led the whole market to be significantly slower. I think the major change now is the capacity for local individuals to invest and helping companies to grow.
And I picked up, I thought I just mentioned also in relative terms, you know, the outstanding organic growth in your client franchises on the Q1 report that shows that it's grown 67% AUM year on year to 450 billion reais. So it's quite a jump, right?
Yeah, and I think it's mostly driven by this.
Yeah. And then now if we look at the connection, you know, and the opportunity for Europe also, you know, to looking at LATAM and looking at Brazil and the other countries where you are, where you have footprint, what is it that you think that investors should be focusing on or looking at, you know, from the overall growth, the conditions, the good conditions, market conditions, and then obviously from the sustainable and impact investment perspective?
I think historically we receive a lot of FDI, foreign direct investment, from European companies for historical reasons. I think there was a huge migration from Europeans to Latin America in the past.
You're looking at two, yeah. Consequently,
yeah. My grandmother from my mom's family came from Italy. My grandfather from my dad's side came from France. My grandmother from Germany. So I think this is a little bit of who we are. And with that, a lot of companies felt comfortable investing in the region. So we've seen the privatization process in the 90s, a lot of Spanish, Portuguese, French companies coming to the region. Significantly more than the North American companies. So when you look at the energy market, when you look at even the airport sector, you look at the water sector, it's mostly dominated by European companies. And I think for a little while, for the last, I would say, 10 years, we've seen a slowdown in the amount of European companies coming. But I think more recently, with the amount of concessions, privatizations, and programs there were targeting to attract foreign capital, I think we started to see, again, a fairly large number of European companies looking for opportunities here. When you look at long-term investments in the region, especially in Brazil, you see, in the short term, you see some volatility in FX, which is normally a consideration for those who want to come. But in the long term, you see that normally FX is not the main issue for investments. And I think one thing that it's fairly important to notice now is with LATAM being more focused on impact investing, more focused on impact investing products, we think that we can learn a lot from European investors who've been through that. And this could come from headquarters, from big companies who are already invested in the region, fomenting best practices, exchanging of ideas, and pushing their subsidiaries here to follow the same concepts. This could come from new investments, new investors looking for opportunities to put money to work here, following more European guidelines than what we have here. This could also come from institutions in the region paying more attention and having more a stronger cooperation with European institutions to learn best practices. I think we are in a very interesting moment for Europeans who want to come to the region and take advantage of a very large concession privatization program that has been put in place by the government.
And I think as well it's interesting because, again, I'm kind of thinking out loud as well here is, you know, we've seen the, like you said, the traditional kind of approach or behavior of relationship with the privatizations. But I think there's definitely big room for two parts, right? So depending on what the mandate is, right? So there's one, from one part, investors looking for, let's say, portfolio diversification, you know, given, you know, some of the different type of deals that you have in terms of, you know, within the remit, their sectors, you know, what they're looking for. And then more specifically as well, on the other hand, those that are looking at a specific kind of impact areas, you know, such as, you know, financial inclusion or poverty or agribusinesses, you know, or farm, you know, related businesses. So I think there is so many opportunities there, right? And then on top of that, what I think about many times, which is the other way around. So you mentioned using some of the best practices from here to go and use there, but you have the local teams and the local knowledge. And you know the local people, right? And businesses, the cultures, you know, so many other parts that, you know, again, I think that in the past, and these are bigger conversations that are happening, by the way, obviously, Renato, you know, around the world, it's like how much more of the again, not to sound too much about it, but the imperialism type approach, you know, where we come from Europe into local places and, you know, we take over again, we buy the businesses rather than, you know, ask the people locally, you know, what is it that is required, right? Or this is another bigger conversation is going on around, like, do we come again with the answer, you know, and the solutions for impact and SDGs, right? Rather than, okay, let's try to work it out, you know, really locally and come from there and that way generate the impact and the profit that goes, you know, hand in hand in this case. So I think there's definitely room for both, really, right? In terms of, you know, how we can make it work. Because, you know, your team, you know, has great experience, right?
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. And I think we should obviously never forget that you have to have the local flavor. You have to respect what local people understand about the region and what you can and cannot do here. But also, I think the concept we have nowadays, it's more cooperative approach. So we shouldn't be focusing on someone coming just to tell somebody else what to do. It's something that should be hand by hand done. But if there is someone who is more advanced on the topic, has experienced more, has gone through to overcome some obstacles and understand what has worked, what has not worked, why not to learn from them as well? You can obviously always adjust, always make changes, but it's also very interesting to learn from them. I'll tell you one thing. When I came from the IDB, I basically copy and paste the IDB's ESG policy in our funds. So it was basically a simple copy and paste. Since then, we've made some adjustments, but we follow a lot of the guidelines from the IDB. I mean, it's not that far apart from what we used to have when I came from IDB. The bank has signed a number of agreements, including the Equator Principle, a lot of principles following the UN policies, PRI, among many others. So I think this is to say that we always have to have a local flavor, but never forgetting to learn from those who were more advanced and has experienced more. It's like listening to your dad, listening to your grandpa. You don't have to follow what they say, but you have to listen because they learn a lot more than you. And you can take advantage of their own mistakes and what has worked well and eventually evolve from there.
But it's an interesting point you raised there because the challenge sometimes is, okay, so... Yes, you know, and most times, you know, the youngsters don't listen. So that's a good attitude, Renato. And then the other one is, again, the challenge of, okay, so how do we get the track record, the trust to then, you know, get the capital to manage it, right? So on that note, I'd like to just briefly touch in, you know, your kind of your team and some of the work that you do, because you have, I think I picked up a couple of numbers again and details. So I think you have a client base of over 150 LPs. Kind of local institutional investors, endowment, pension funds, funds of funds, family office. Obviously, you have the alternate high net individuals within the asset management business. And then you have this experience across, by the way. So it's across Latin America, North America. You do some global deals as well. And then I was just trying to remember in terms of the funds that you have as of today, you have, I think, is it 5 infra funds and you have 2 private equity funds. Right. Besides some proprietary investment, because you are, I didn't talk about that at the intro about BTG. One of the things that you guys have is that you are pretty entrepreneurial and you are, you know, deal makers, right? So that's kind of at the DNA of the firm and the founders, right? So, and if anyone looks at the story as well, they can look at, you know, the buys and sell and sales and mergers and all the risks that you have been taking as well. So it's I think it's a real, you know, great example of, again, innovation, entrepreneurship, you know, and success, right? So, and then kudos to you. But did I get right in terms of the funds that you have? And then obviously you have the private equity impact fund that you are currently roadshowing.
Yeah, we've had 5 infra fund, 2 PE funds, going to the third one. Then we had the prop cap is mostly partners capital. It's not the bank's capital, but it's the partners capital. And then we have the impact fund that we are talking to investors as we speak. But we normally, what we do is we like to invest ahead of actually raising the fund when we transfer assets to the fund. The fund normally starts with roughly 40% invested. And we believe that this is a way to show to investors not asking for a blank check, but just to planning a rough idea of what the fund is going to look like. We like to work with quick J curves, which means shorter tenor funds, instead of what we've seen in the world nowadays, funds moving from 10 to 12 years long. We decided to shrink the time frame of our funds, reducing from 10 to 7 year funds. And the impact fund, I think it's something that we've been dreaming to do for a long time, but there was no traction before. Investors thought that investing in aiming for impact would mean a way to lose money because you would have to give up returns to actually obtain impact, which is something that I always disagree. I think that you can have both. It's not because you're aiming to impact society that you have to give up returns. As I said before, I don't perceive that sustainable long-term impact funds should be donating money or working with charity. Quite the contrary. We should be looking for companies that have embedded in their DNA positive impacts. So I'll give you a few examples. You mentioned before the agro sector, which is a major sector in the region, especially in Brazil, in Argentina. It's a major sector. We've seen companies in the agri-tech business where they provide tools, resources, tech resources for small agro-investors, entrepreneurs, to better manage their crop, to better manage their cash flow, to better manage their distribution, to better manage the way they can sell their products. So for me, if we can help a small agro entrepreneur to have a cheap but reliable tech to manage everything that I just mentioned, this is sustainable impact investing because the company doesn't have to donate any money to be impacting society. The money doesn't have to be depending on charity to grow. But the companies on a daily basis going to small entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs that some of them, they would have a very hard time to access how big or how likely they are to sell their crop or to whom they will be selling, how they will be taking into consideration the whole accounting process and providing a very cheap tool for them to manage all of this. So when you look at opportunities like this, or when you look at a education company that we witness and we end up investing in, which they provide online education to a fairly large number of people, the great majority of them, almost between 60 and 70% of them are women, and helping them to get better prepared to take the national exam or the state exam or the municipal exams, to allow them to move from informality to a reliable and a stable public service job. So when you look at a company like this, the amount of impact that they are causing in millions of people who are able to take, in to a certain extent, free online courses, and later on, this free online courses, the view of this company is that for the first 24 hours, they present a online course to get the students prepare to take the exam, they can access the course for free. But later on, it tends to be a course that they would have to pay if they want to have access to this same video that was for free for the first 24 hours. But if they want to take every 24 hours a new course and take the whole course for free, they can. And this is a major impact investment in my view, because you allow people that had no job, whether a street vendor, or had no capacity to forecast whether or not they would have means to provide to their family. And all of a sudden, they are able to get prepared, pass on an entrance examination, and have a job that would allow them to have all this capacity to provide for their family. So I think the way we see, and you asked me in the beginning of this conversation, how I see sustainable impact investing, I think this is an example of sustainable impact investing companies.
Now, I was going to ask you actually for an example, so thank you for sharing that. And then also, there's two things. I was going to ask you, something, but let me just pick on a bit more, perhaps on to showcase like the strategy that you're following with this new fund you're launching. I know that you mentioned that you look at the transactions, ideally 40%, which is kind of across all your funds. I know that you have, again, if people look at the website, which I mentioned before, it's quite evident there from an ESG perspective, how you're looking at the approaches, you know, a bit like you mentioned, kind of gold standard, you know, with exclusion, integration and impact, which, you know, is quite kind of 1, 2, 3 simple for people to appreciate. So it's something that you're doing. And then in terms of the, when you go into the impact fund itself, anything more in particular that you can share in terms of your strategy and your selection process?
Sure. So I think what I've done since the beginning, we had a group of people who were working on the impact group within BTG. BTG started in 2015 with a very strong ESG risk management group. From there, I think we learned a lot and we progressed in 2020 to the impact investing group, where we provide a support to some of our clients in how to develop impact investing products. And they've been working together since 2015, gathered a lot of knowledge, a lot of capacity. And I would say a good chunk of their group came to the private equity group so that together we analyzed the investments. And how do we do it? So every time we see, in order to prepare our framework, we work with a very well-known consulting company in Brazil called Citawi. And they've been advising a number of clients in how to implement impact investing policies. And they work starting with the basis of what we had from the IDB. They work to evolve and to make a stronger policy. Every time we analyze a company, we assess from 1, 2, 3 how impactful this investment could be. Obviously, if it's below 2, it's not for us. So it has to be 1 or 2. And in order to assess whether it's 1 or 2, we have a very comprehensive framework that we follow in terms of whether this is impacting, how this is impacting the environment, how this is impacting the population. At the end of this framework, we grade 1, 2, and 3. Once we are discussing with the entrepreneurs, we always impose conditions, KPIs, so they have to follow throughout the investment horizon. So they cannot simply manage the company the way they were managing before, but we would impose new KPIs, new policies in order to make sure they have stronger impact investing policies. And most important, in my view, we condition some of their payments to these KPIs. So if they don't achieve the KPIs, part of the payment we were supposed to make is reduced. So we don't make the payment. We don't make full payment. We make a partial payment so that they can feel the pain of complying with the impact investing KPI. So it's not enough if they have a fantastic return. It's fantastic if they have a fantastic return and a fantastic impact investing KPI. If they have one but not the other, then their remuneration will be impacted. And on top of that, we do the same to the management team, because obviously entrepreneurs, in a number of cases, they are the management team, but they are not alone. They have other people working with them. And these other people, they have to be fully aligned. They have to understand that if their bosses are not complying with the KPIs, they have to push their bosses to actually comply with the KPIs. Otherwise, the management performance and remuneration will be impacted. And it's been great, so far great, because individuals that we've been working with, they obviously care about sustainable impact investing. But I would say that maybe it's not correct to say, but I do believe that they care even more when they understand that a piece of their company they are selling and a piece of their remuneration will depend on how truly impactful their actions will be going forward. And I think it's been a great journey.
Fantastic. Yes, that is very interesting. And I know that there is so much more, and I'm a bit conscious of time, but, you know, so that people get another layer of understanding of perhaps there's two more parts that I would like to cover, which potentially one could be the impact measurement, so how you're looking at it. And also, I know that you have quite a significant and kind of, it's not complex, but you know, a very well thought governance process. So is that something that you can share a bit more for the audience to understand, you know, how much work you have done, you know, especially in the last 12 months, I've seen, you know, the evolution. So it's a lot of work that has been done.
It's a very interesting question, JP, because I think we've made a lot of changes, and I think we are very serious about sustainability in a number of fashions, in a number of ways. I'll tell you, we developed the ESG risk management group in 2015, as I mentioned before. But before we were, I think we had a very strong policy, but I think it was mostly for internal purpose. I think in 2020, when we decided to create the impact investing group, first of all, the group was created by two senior partners of the bank. So two very senior partners who've been running different groups within the bank for a number of years, put together this group, and they've been working on this group together. Second of all, we retain a lot of talented people, very young and talented people in different groups to work and to continue to support the development of the group. I think most people would not know, but in 2020, we are net zero carbon emission group, which is it's a major change. And you can see from minor things like no plastic cups, people bringing their own bottle to drink, and people really asking one another, why bring your bottle? Why are you buying this plastic bottle? And I think this has been embedded slowly in our DNA, and also comes with the new generation that we are bringing into the bank. A lot of the young folks will not accept to work in a place that do not respect the environment, do not respect gender. And I think we've been making a lot of effort to adjust. So we've been a part of the Brazilian Stock Exchange Sustainability Index, which is not for a large number of companies, but I think we've been working on that. We, together with S&P and the Brazilian Stock Exchange, we developed an ETF of this sustainability index, which was quite innovative. And it was mostly pushed by us to develop this ETF. We've been more and more recruiting women. I'll tell you about my own group. If you ask me 2 years ago, I basically had no women. I think the last six hirings, four of which were women. And we are aiming to hire two more this year. So I have two more hirings for this year, and we already put forward to HR that they need to find women to the team. So I think as a group, we've been making a lot of changes, and I believe that this is unstoppable behavior. So if you ask me 2 years from now, I think we're going to be even better than what we are today. But it's, as you said in the beginning, it's part of the experience. We are learning and in an effort to do better.
Yeah, changing from the inside, right? And then on the measurement, anything in particular that you want to share in terms of how you're approaching it? Because I know that you are looking at the SDGs, you know, you're looking at ESG, obviously, and impact. And then obviously you have the investment process as well, which has, you know, a pretty substantial governance. Anything that you want to highlight?
From the way we've been measuring our impact, we develop a fairly large set of framework together with external consultants. So not only how we see, but we brought different stakeholders that we could be impacting, from NGOs to consulting companies, learn from best practices from multilateral organizations that I mentioned to you before, in order to work together on our internal measurement system that we have in place today.
Brilliant. And I know, again, I know that some of this information is not available on the website, and some of it is not proprietary, but I just do, you know, I would like people to know, you know, that, you know, within obviously some of the tools that you're using those that are, you know, at the top of the list internationally, obviously including the principle for responsible investing. You know, you are using the Iris Plus, the Impact Measurement Project, which again is well known to everyone globally. And then obviously you follow a very rigorous process when it comes to, you know, the planning, the origination, the structuring, the due diligence, the investment committee, the portfolio monitoring. So I know that it's just some of the obvious, but for many, you know, that are in the industry, but for many that, you know, are not, perhaps, you know, sometimes people want to understand, okay, how does it all come together? So I thought I just mentioned that. And then also maybe just to recap, you know, you did mention quite a lot of the opportunities and everything that is happening, but I like to perhaps highlight that, you know, I have many conversations obviously with you and also with Jane Maltz, who is, you know, one of the members of your team, you know, focused on the European business, you know, that you are looking at kind of target segments and focus. So you have the resilient cities and climate change mitigation. And obviously we talked about waste management, renewable energy. Maybe we didn't talk about too much, you know, sustainable agribusiness, which we talk a little bit. And again, energy efficiency, again, we didn't talk, but we could talk for hours, as we know. And then clear water sanitation, again, just to tick, you know, because we do cover that. You mentioned education, a bit of maybe financial inclusion and healthcare, which we didn't cover. But again, you are looking at all the big opportunities, large segments, you know, in terms of what is required, you know, compound with the growth, right? And the low interest. So all of these, you know, is just that kind of a... I picked up another article today and it's like, you know, it's, and I think you did as well, one called LATAM is prime for impact investing, right? So it's kind of, if the variables were not good already before, you know, right now, everything seems to be kind of lining up, right?
Yeah, I think, as you said, low interest rate, governments realizing that they need to attract foreign capital, private capital, because governments do not have the capacity now to deploy all this capital. We have investors looking to fund new companies. You have an entrepreneurial spirit. So a lot of young folks now, they want to develop their own companies. And I think people realizing that they need to impact in a positive manner society. So I think we're seeing a number of very interesting opportunities. You highlighted some of the sectors there that we are aiming to invest. These are sectors in which I think it's natural sector for us to see impact. This is not to say that every single investment in these sectors will be the appropriate investment, but they are sectors that most likely provide opportunities in which we can find a good fit for what we intend to do in this fund. But I think in general terms, as you correctly pointed out, I think it's a very interesting moment for investors to look at the region.
Mm. And on that note, what would be the ideal investor? Renato, who should reach out to you?
I think investors who do care about impact, but also care about the returns. I think we are not aiming to attract those who are just simply expecting to do good, but not very much concerned about whether or not this would have a financial return. I think, like I always give an example to the team, if you receive money from a pension fund, a lot of people who contributed for a number of years to this pension fund expect one day to retire and to have enough money to have a decent lifestyle going forward. So if we don't perform according to what we promised to these investors, they won't be able to have the expected lifestyle that they had in mind when they invested with us. So I think on the other hand, we don't expect investors that simply expect to have financial return and do not expect to have any major impact, because the way we are investing, the way we're going to provide a report to them takes into consideration both the financial and the impact return. So for me, the ideal investor is the one that cares about both, cares about impact, cares about financial return, and is committed to a long-term investment.
And then obviously the one thing I think that you didn't mention, you've been doing so many things to obviously, you know, cater for different type of investors. You also did the first green bond, right? Which, you know, it was quite well received. But we did, I think I mentioned you offline, you know, I did hear, you know, people still challenging some of the interest behind, and then even some of the governance, you know, just not BDG, but just governance in general, you know, with LATAM. And which I find it very interesting, because I wonder if it is still like a very conscious bias that people still have against emerging markets or LATAM, you know, countries, right? So any comments, perhaps? I know that that's a bigger conversation, perhaps, and we can talk for another half an hour just on that. But and I think it's a good opportunity to answer, you know, a bit more to the general public, right, for education.
Yeah, no, I think governance is something that we care a lot. It's something that I think it's always ongoing, and we are always willing to have ongoing improvements in governance. But I think it's something that as we preach to our companies, we cannot preach our companies to enhance governance unless we have a very solid one. And I think when you look at the way the market, not only the stock market, but also regulators, our peers, perceive us, I think you can see how much effort we continue to make over the last few years to be at the highest level that anyone could expect us to be.
Okay, as we're coming to the end now, I know that, you know, it's interesting, you know, I still believe I'm very young, but I'm a bit older than you, and I was still very young. Obviously, you know, you share a bit of your evolution, but I know about you, and I've read a little bit about your story. What is happening to Renato Mazzola right now, you know, with COVID? You know, I know that you mentioned that you were really enjoying being at home, not so much travel. What is really driving you kind of today, Renato?
For me, JP, I had to rethink about the way I was living. You know, you mentioned about traveling. I think you start rethinking what are your priorities, how you live your life. So for the first time in many, many years, I would say close to 20 years, I have a routine, so I can exercise in the morning, I can eat better, and I can go to bed on a regular basis at the same time, which before was almost impossible to believe that I would have this type of lifestyle. So I think for me, this has an impact on a number of different matters. Like, for instance, I expect and I tell my team about how much better lifestyle is today, how we can do better, how we can work eventually, even though most people say they're working more, and I do believe that we're working more, but I would say that we are more working on a more productive way. So you don't waste so much time and you focus more on your real priorities. So I think since the beginning of the pandemic, I think the biggest change, biggest evolution was to rethink about the way I was living. And so far, so good.
Nice, nice. And then on that note, what is to you, what makes an impact leader, which is, you know, the name of our podcast, of course, right? And obviously, I can pick up a bit of like you as a manager are, you know, appreciating other things, right? And obviously, I think the word balance maybe came through, you know, into the last year. But what do you think is the characteristics? And obviously, you have worked with amazing people, you know, all through your career that you have picked up as, you know, the characteristics of an impact leader.
I think for me, someone who is generous, someone who cares about other people, not only about themselves, and someone who is a good role model, someone that you can inspire other people. So it's not enough just to tell people what to do or how to do things, but it's important that you behave in this way. So I think, as you mentioned before, I had great colleagues, great bosses, and I think I hope I can be a good one to my team, to a good friend, to my colleagues here. And the way I live, the way I behave, the way I do business would inspire other people to behave the same way.
And as you said, there was the call to action, the last call to action, aside from the fact of how can people get in touch with you?
I would just tell people to go for and do things. Don't just expect other people to do. And don't expect that just because you're doing something good to society, you have to give up returns. I think you can do both and achieve success in both without having to give up one or the other.
Okay, amen. I like that. I like it. Perfect. Thank you so, so much, Renato.
Thank you, JP.
Yeah, a real, real pleasure. Much appreciate your time. And we didn't get to talk about this, but you are actually working on a live deal that hopefully is going to complete today, right? But we cannot really talk too much about it. But it's been on the news. It's the the biggest, the biggest private equity deal in the history of the region?
Yeah, it's fairly interesting.
Chunky, as we say. So everyone, you know, ideally by the time this gets published, everyone is going to find out about it. I say nothing for now, but I keep my fingers crossed for you.
Thank you very much, JP. I appreciate very much the conversation.
Okay. Thank you, Randall.
Thank you.
Perfect. Before I go, I wanted to take this opportunity to invite you to partner with me and Impact Leaders. We want to help and do more to raise awareness and create action. The podcast is one of the catalytic initiatives to help deliver on our mission to raise awareness to help transition capital into sustainable and impact investing faster and scale. If you would like to support it, you can become a patron and also make a one-off contributions at bit.ly/IL patron. So we're also looking for 3 founder sponsors to support our mission to enable the transition of capital into sustainable impact investing, as well as 10 impact leaders interested to join our program. Please reach out via our contact us page at ilampartners.com or go to bit.ly/IL club to register your interest. It is bye for now and until our next episode of Impact Leaders, and God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by ILA and Partners. Please connect with us to work together in the transition of capital into sustainable and impact investing.